Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's a lovely Wednesday in April. This is going to be first broadcast on WHUS on April 19th, 2023. It will be on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm flying solo today because I'm not recording on a Monday in preparation for the CNPA, that's the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Conference. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let me know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Weather's getting much nicer. It's supposed to get into the 80s at the end of this week, which was kind of crazy because it's only April. And we're going to have a couple of 80-degree days, which is sort of exciting. And it's going to be 2 days of 80 degrees and then it's going to get back in. Today it's going to be 60s and 70s and then the weekend it's going to be back into the 60s and 70s. And next week it's going to be once again, you know, April-ish 60s, which I'll take over really cold weather because you can get out and ride your bike. You can get out and go for walks. If you're one of those who's been using, well, the weather is an excuse to not get outside, that's going away. So you can get outside, you can get out with your dog, you can go exercise in your yard, you can do some yard work, whatever you would like to do. I'm a little frustrated right now because I just came back from the dentist and the news is not good. And you'd think that I'm a naturopathic physician, so I would know how to take care of my teeth, and I do know how to take care of my teeth, but it appears that all of the flossing and picking and water flossing and remineralizing stuff that I take isn't enough to get in between my teeth, so I have decay in between my teeth that they have to keep fixing. And this time they said, well, you have enough of it that some of it is getting close to nerves and we don't want you to have a root canal, so we have to get to it right away. I actually let them varnish my teeth with fluoride because I'm so frustrated, and I wouldn't ordinarily do that, but I decided that that was something I would let them do. And you know, I use remineralizing rinse, which doesn't seem to be doing the trick getting between my teeth. One of the things that my hygienist suggested, there's a paste that you can get that has calcium phosphate in it. And I put that on my teeth after I'm done brushing them. But she said I should put it on my dental floss and I should floss with it that way. So I'm going to try doing that. And so that'll get that remineralizing stuff in between the teeth. But it's just very frustrating. I think that, and the other thing that I haven't been doing that is something you can try, is you can get a probiotic that's specific to the bacteria in your mouth, that if it sets up, it will help to fight the strep mutans, the bacteria that tends to collect in your mouth and cause tooth decay. What she is suggesting is that there's something going on with my mouth that my body is not necessarily fighting off the bacteria causes tooth decay, and there's some immune thing going on. So, and it has to do with my mouth. And it is important to remember to do something before you go to bed, that make sure that you have some, I probably need to do some remineralization before I go to sleep so that it's sitting on my teeth all night. And that might be helpful too. But it's very frustrating because I didn't used to have this problem when I was younger. I don't know if some of you have an issue where you're getting more decay as you get older. I'm approaching a big decade birthday this November, and I've never had this much issue with decay where I have to go back a couple of times to have a bunch of fillings done. So anyway, it is what it is. I'll work as hard as I can, but I am going to try that. That's something that I have not been doing consistently, which is taking a probiotic lozenge that is going to impart beneficial bacteria to my mouth, and hopefully it will outcompete the strep mutans. All the other stuff, you know, it's all the remineralization is not doing it, but if it's the issue is the bacteria, then fighting the bacteria with a good probiotic can be helpful. And consuming acidic things and not drinking water. She suggested it was my electrolyte drink, chewy candy. She's not as concerned about chocolate and ice cream and things like that in terms of sugar, but sticky candies. So if you like gumdrops or fruits, you know, candy fruit slices, or any kind of a fruit chew or Starbursts, those are nightmares to a dental hygienist and to a dentist. Also honey, they're not big fans of honey. And it's not as much of an issue if you consume those things and then you drink a lot of water afterwards or you brush afterwards, then it's probably less of an issue. But anytime sugar sticks to the surfaces of your teeth, you're going to be more likely to get decay because those little bacteria love to eat that sugar. And then they multiply and they make acidic plaque and that eats at your teeth. And that's what happens. So I'm so frustrated because this keeps happening to me. And probably I should do a whole, I should repeat a whole series on dental hygiene and things you can do for dental hygiene. But I just wanted to whine a little because I just came back from the dentist. If you're watching me on Facebook Live, they did this fluoride varnish and you might be able to see that there's fluoride varnish on my teeth right now, that my teeth look tacky because she put this stuff on my teeth. And there you're like, whoa, you would do fluoride? Well, you know, I might do a little fluoride now and again if it means I'm going to keep my teeth, because fluoride has been studied to be helpful. So has calcium phosphate. And if you can get pastes with calcium phosphate that you can leave on your teeth, then that's a good thing too. That's also studied to be helpful. So between calcium phosphate and fluoride and mechanically brushing your teeth and getting the stuff out from in between your teeth and taking the probiotic and making sure you do stuff before you go to bed so that you have something resting on your teeth, that you have a clean slate before you go to sleep. If you're not brushing your teeth before you go to sleep, that's a really good thing to do, especially if you snack at night so that you have a clean slate as you go to sleep. That you've rinsed your mouth out, you've got some remineralizing stuff in there. As I said, if you get a paste that has calcium phosphate in it and you put it on your teeth and leave it there, that can help. You can also get toothpastes that have nanocalcite in it. And you can use that and leave that on your teeth and see if that's helpful as well. Then see if you get better checkups. I just can't believe that every time I go, the news is not good. And I don't know if any of you have had that experience that as you get older, every time you show up to the dentist, the news is not good. It's very frustrating, isn't it? So I'm going to pull my mic a little bit closer so you might see the mic in the frame a little bit more so I can sound a little bit louder to you, but it's going to obscure my face a little bit if you're looking on Facebook Live. All right, so we've been doing a series on cardiovascular health, and one of the things I'm featuring is how do certain drugs work. So a lot of you take statins. Statins are those HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. And one of the things I think I forgot to mention at last show was that HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors inhibit the production of coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is a very important nutrient in our bodies. It runs your mitochondria. Your mitochondria are the energy centers inside your cells, and they're in every cell in your body. And you need coenzyme Q10 to transport the electrons in the electron transport chain. And so they're very important for energy in which cells in your body? All of them, including your heart. Your heart, of course, is beating all the time, so it needs lots of CoQ10. If you have a CoQ10 deficiency, you're going to be more likely to have a deficiency to have issues with your heart, and you could have high blood pressure and you could have heart rhythm issues. So I take a lot of CoQ10, even though I'm not on a statin. But Ron takes CoQ10 because he is on a statin. And we thought that CoQ10 would be helpful in protecting you from rhabdomyolysis. So rhabdomyolysis is that severe muscle breakdown that statins can cause. He hasn't gotten rhabdomyolysis, but he does have a lot of muscle pain. So he's actually going to change medications, and I'll tell you about that today. There's another drug that you can take that's not a statin. For some people, it has less side effects. For some people, it does not. And this is not a drug that's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. This is a drug that causes you to excrete more cholesterol from your body. So this is interesting. So there is my link. All right, so I have to go in and find another place to tell you about this drug. Ezetimibe. I want to tell you all about ezetimibe. Okay, so let's look at how ezetimibe works. All right, so we're going to go to Heart UK and tell you all about ezetimibe. So ezetimibe is a medicine that lowers cholesterol, and it may be prescribed alongside a statin. It works in different ways than a statin. It can help to lower your cholesterol numbers further. You can get in a combination tablet with simvastatin, which is a statin. So it can lower cholesterol by 15 to 22% alone, and 21 to 27% if it's in combination with a statin. If you add statins to ezetimibe, it can lower cholesterol more than doubling the dose of the statin. So you're better off if you want to lower it more. Instead of taking, you know, a double dose of your statin, you can add ezetimibe to it. What it is a cholesterol absorption inhibitor. It works by partially blocking the absorption of cholesterol in your small intestine. That means less cholesterol will get into your blood from food in the bile, so the liver has to take more cholesterol out of the blood to make more bile that you need for digestion. So your liver increases the number of LDL receptors on your liver cells, so the receptors catch LDL as it passes by and remove it from the blood. So that's interesting. So that's how it basically works. So in your small intestine, as you consume cholesterol, if any cholesterol gets in by foods that you eat, it blocks the receptors there. So when your liver sees this, it increases the number of LDL receptors in your liver cells. So that means when LDL comes through the liver, through circulation, the liver's going to pick up the extra cholesterol. So it's going to come out of circulation more readily. So it's interesting. So side effects. So does ezetimibe have side effects? Absolutely. I can tell you from watching Ron, it definitely has side effects. You would think that because it's not an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor, it's not blocking your CoQ10, but it still has the side effects, because when you precipitously lower cholesterol in a way that the body is not expecting, there are side effects. People have problems with their digestion and they have abdominal pain. They can get diarrhea. They can get gas and bloating, and they can get fatigue. That's when you take it by itself. When you take it with a statin, which is what Ram was doing, you can also get muscle pain, headaches, and have elevated liver enzymes. Now, Ron gets headaches periodically. He thinks they're more from his sinuses, but he definitely has muscle pain, which is unfortunate. And one of the things he reported with the ezetimibe, when he takes ezetimibe, he'll wake up in the morning and his knees will be cramped, closed, and he'll have to mechanically open up his knees so that he can move and walk. It's really pretty amazing. It's unfortunate. It's hard to watch him in the morning because that's what happens. And he has been taking ezetimibe along with the statin. And when he stops the ezetimibe for a few days, that effect seems to mitigate. It seems to go away. So that's kind of interesting. He has never, to my knowledge, had elevated liver enzymes. Every time he shows me his labs, when you're taking a statin drug, and I guess when you're taking ezetimibe too, they monitor your liver enzymes regularly. So what's a liver enzyme? A liver enzyme is something that your liver uses as part of its bodily processes. When your liver is inflamed or irritated, the cells will open up and they dump their contents into your blood. And among the contents that they dump are these two compounds, ALT and AST, alanine aminotransferase and astatine aminotransferase, also known as SGOPT, SGOT, and SGPT. And I forget what those stand for, but the ALT and ALT, they're the same thing. They're two names for the same thing. And that is what is measured in your blood. Depending on the lab and the reference ranges, you will see them listed either as ALT and AST. Usually you see ALT, AST. Some labs still use SGPT, SGOT. And again, I can't remember what that stands for, but I could look it up for you. Anyway, when those enzymes are elevated, that means that the drug is causing damage to the liver and inflammation to the liver. So the doctor may want to back off on the dose or have you stop for a little bit. So one of the questions is, can you eat foods with sterols or stanols? Foods that have sterols and stanols in them, like soybeans. So soybeans have sterols and stanols in them. And if you if you eat sterols and stanols, will they lower your cholesterol? Well, they might. They might, but it's hard to say. And so that's something that we do. And in my practice, in my naturopathic practice, one of the things that we try to do is we will give people sterols and stanols to take as pills. It's not ezetimibe. It's natural sterols and stanols. And they work in a similar manner. They bond to cholesterol receptors in your small intestine and make it so that you absorb less cholesterol. If they work, they don't always work. But we definitely do give sterols and stanols as a supplement. And many different plants have them in them, particularly beans and legumes, particularly soybeans. A lot of times when you take plant sterols, they're extracted from soy. That's where you get them. And they tend to be pretty harmless. Some people don't do well with them. Some people will take them and they'll get all kinds of digestive upset with them. I've seen people try to take sterols and they don't feel well when they take them. I've seen people stop taking them because they don't work for them. So anyway, that's ezetimibe. So ezetimibe is problematic. It can be helpful to some people. If you need your cholesterol lowered and you take it and you don't have side effects and you're happy, then it can be a beneficial thing. But for a lot of people, there's a lot of side effects. So what's the next thing that you do? And so if you're still on in a track where you have to lower cholesterol more, and the thing is, when you have had bypass surgery, which is what Ron had, when you have had bypass surgery, they want your cholesterol pretty low because they see you at risk for a major cardiac event, a heart attack or a stroke. So what they do is they try to lower your cholesterol as much as possible. And they want your LDL cholesterol below 70, which is very hard for most people to achieve without medication. So Ron is on medication. This little skinny guy, he's on this medication. So one of the things he did was, you know, as Ron is a cyclist and he wants to be able to work out, and he works out a lot. He's teaching a lot of classes right now, and he's working out outside as well. He's working in the yard, and he's also getting on his bike and riding outdoors. So he's very, very physically active. So those muscles that are being compromised by these drugs are getting used a lot. So he's going to have more pain than your average person because he's using those muscles a lot. So when he talked to his doc, he said, all right, the next thing we're going to try is a PCSK9 inhibitor. So what's a PCSK9 inhibitor? So PCSK9 inhibitors. So he was given evolocumab, and that's an injectable. And so he's going to come off. I think he's going to continue to take the statin, but not the ezetimibe. And he's going to take this evolocumab instead. So it's a PCSK9 inhibitor. They lower cholesterol. And they do work by lowering LDL cholesterol, but they work on a different enzyme. They don't work on HMG-CoA reductase. They work on this other enzyme, PCSK9. And so they reduce LDL cholesterol, and your liver makes a protein, a pro-protein convertase subtilisin kexin type 9. Got that? Let's say that again. Pro-protein convertase subtilisin kexin type 9, also abbreviated as PCSK9. And what it does, it regulates how many LDL receptors you have. So if you have naturally high PCSK9, you're more likely to have high cholesterol. So what this drug does is it blocks these receptors, these PCSK9 inhibitors. So LDL can't bond, so it can't hurt you as much. Supposedly. So if your cholesterol is still high after taking other medications, it's often given to people with familial hypercholesterolemia. And as I can tell you, it's given to people who are at risk for major cardiac events. And Ron never had a major cardiac event. Major cardiac event is a heart attack or a stroke. He never had that. All he had was shortness of breath. And when he got examined for the shortness of breath, it was discovered that he had blocked arteries after further examination. But they want his cholesterol to be really low. His quality of life is not good on the other medications. So the thing is, one of the ways that you make sure that you have good cardiovascular health, and one of the things that made it so that Ron did not have a major cardiac event, was that he in fact did a lot of cardio exercise. He had these four majorly blocked coronary arteries, but he had made so much collateral circulation, adding blood to his heart, that he never had a heart attack. And so it would be crazy to make it so that the drugs that he's on to lower his cholesterol make it so that he can't get exercise, when exercise is what saved his life in the first place. So, of course, his doctor was willing to work with him, thank goodness, on finding a regimen that he could do that made it so that he was still able to exercise and not be in extreme pain. So other folks that he knew that are cyclists and other kinds of athletes who needed to be on cholesterol meds were put on these PCSK9 inhibitors. And so now he's going to try it. And you keep it in the fridge and you have to inject it. And we don't know how he's going to react to it. He's actually going to take his first dose today, and we'll let you know how that goes. I told him to please not do it until I'm done recording this show, because I want to be there for it. So it breaks down the LDL receptors. The PCSK9, the enzyme, breaks down the LDL receptors, and they're on the outside of the cells in your body. The receptors attach to LDL and carry it to your liver, where the liver breaks it down. The PCSK9 inhibitors block the PCSK9 proteins from breaking down your LDL receptors. So PCSK9 breaks down LDL receptors. You want to have more LDL receptors in the liver so that when blood flows through the liver containing LDL, as it passes through the liver, any LDL that is there is going to bond to cells in your liver. And so that's how they work. So you have more LDL receptors in your liver because they're not being broken down by PCSK9. So this is a different mechanism than HMG-CoA reductase. HMG-CoA reductase interferes with the production of cholesterol. This does not. So HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors interfere with the production of cholesterol. HMG-CoA reductase is an enzyme that is critical in the production of cholesterol, as well as coenzyme Q10. So statins block this enzyme, HMG-CoA reductase, whereas PCSK9 inhibitors break down PCSK9, this enzyme that breaks down your LDL receptors. So more LDL receptors in the liver, less LDL in circulation. That's how it works. Okay. So there's a couple of drugs out there. One of them is alirocumab, not what Ron is on, and evolocumab, which is what Ron is going to be taking. And so you take them as an injection. You get the injection at a hospital or at your provider's office every 3 months. This says every 3 months, which means you're going to get a much higher dose. That's not what he's getting. He's getting a two-week injection. So apparently he's going to get a two-week dose and have to inject himself every 2 weeks. So he's getting a lower dose at a time. They can significantly lower LDL cholesterol, and they can lower your LDL like 50%. So the thought is that less risk of a major cardiac event. They still can have side effects of fatigue, muscle pain, and soreness. You're still not out of the woods on that one. So we'll see if he's more out of the woods on this one. We don't know. They still can cause muscle pain. Less commonly, they still can cause kidney and liver problems. Because any drug that is detoxified through your body, through your kidneys and liver, your digestive system, can cause symptoms in those areas. So it is possible that he'll get side effects. We don't know. He's talked to friends who are athletes and found that they have less side effects from these things. So, and I think that what happened for Ron was that the ezetimibe was worse than the statin itself. The other thing I'm concerned about is that they're not taking into account that Ron is very small. He doesn't have a lot of body fat, and they're used to working with people who have way too much body fat, and that a little goes a long way, that they should really be dosing him lower than your average person. Although, you know, they want his LDL cholesterol to be below 70. And when he stopped the ezetimibe, his LDL went to 80. And, you know, most of my patients, their LDL is over 100. And doctors fight with them about whether they should take a statin to lower that or not. But, you know, for someone who is at risk of a major cardiac event, which they're afraid that he is, They want his LDL to be below 70. And when it got to 80, they got concerned. And they're like, all right, if you're not going to take the, if you can't take the statins plus ezetimibe, we're going to put you, we're going to try something else. We're going to try this PCSK9 inhibitor. So hopefully it's going to work for him. They are, you know, obviously they're part of a overall healthy plan. So if you want to keep your cholesterol down, you also, you can't get away from the healthy diet thing. Eating a healthy diet, exercising aerobically, managing stress, sleeping regularly, and quitting smoking. Smoking's not an issue in our, hasn't been an issue in our house. I don't know. I don't think Ron ever consistently smoked. I secondhand smoked from not long after I was born until I was approximately 16 years old. There was cigarette smoke going in my home. So I have to hope that there's nothing wrong with my lungs because of that. Because I never smoked myself, but my parents smoked. And my mother quit smoking when I was approximately 12. And I think my father quit when I was 16. So it was in the house, it was in the car. And unfortunately, I was inhaling cigarette smoke. And back in the day, you know, you could go to, you can get a job. I remember I had a job doing market research. If you're on Facebook Live, you can see me pretending to hold the phone. And I also found out that holding, if you hold the phone like this, it means you're of a certain age. You're Gen X and before. If you are Gen Z and beyond, holding the phone looks like this. And this is how you hold the phone, right? So where's my phone? I think I have my Android phone here. Can I bring it in here? I thought I did. Yep, there it is. Okay. So, right. So when you're holding your cell phone, you hold your cell phone like this, right? But when you hold the phone with the receiver, you're pretending you have a receiver. And so if you're older, that's what you do. So that's pretty funny. Anyway, so we never smoked ourselves. And so that's not an issue for us, but all of these things can increase your cholesterol on their own. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. So when you take these PCSK9 inhibitors, you need regular follow-ups with a healthcare provider. And if they lower your cholesterol, you might take them long-term. So that's what's going on with PCSK9. And now I have a good education about how they actually work. They work differently than HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors or statins, right? Okay, so there are other tests that I do to assess whether people need major cardiovascular care. First of all, if the whole thing is you want to make sure you don't have a major cardiac event. So you get concerned you're going to have a major cardiac event if you have what's called dyspnea on exertion. That is, you have shortness of breath when you exert yourself, when you get any kind of exercise, when you stand up. If you have shortness of breath needs to be worked up. By worked up, I mean you need to go to the doctor and figure out why you have shortness of breath. Shortness of breath can be a lot of things, and you have to rule out cardiac causes. You can have, because Ron's main symptom, he didn't have angina, he didn't have chest pain. All he had was shortness of breath on exertion. And because we thought that was so weird, because he was climbing a hill that he usually could execute normally with no problem, wasn't even a very big hill, and he had shortness of breath, and he had to stop and catch his breath to get up the hill, we were like, all right, go to the doctor, get checked out. And when he got checked out, it turned out that he had cardiovascular disease. So shortness of breath can be cardiovascular disease. Shortness of breath can be pulmonary. The number one thing you worry about is that it's cardiovascular. And that's an emergency. That has to be taken care of right away. So, you know, a doc is going to determine whether it's time for you to have an exercise stress test. The exercise stress test will be the first step in determining whether you're going to need to go down the path of, do you need to have your coronary arteries revised, whether it's through stenting or through bypass. If you go to your doctor and they're like, well, no, I don't think you really need an exercise stress test, or you get the exercise stress test and you're clean and you still have shortness of breath, you might have to go to the pulmonologist. And that's number two. And not being able to breathe is bad. Okay. So if you have shortness of breath of any kind, for any reason, you got to breathe. Breathing is super important. You need to get oxygen to all the cells in your body. All of the functions in your body are not going to work well if you don't have adequate oxygen. That should be kind of obvious. So if you get a clean bill of health from your cardiologist and you still have ongoing shortness of breath, the next stop is the pulmonologist. Pulmonologist is somebody who studies your lungs, and they're going to look into your lungs to see if you have any lesions, if you have asthma, if you have inflammation. There can be different things that can be going on. There can be different lesions in your lung. You can have really benign lesions that they don't know what they are. You can have something called sarcoidosis, which is an autoimmune condition that causes ground glass lesions in your lung that can interfere with breathing. You can have lung cancer. And so the sooner you get that checked out, the sooner you can have it taken care of in case it's something serious. And you might just have asthma, or you might have COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or you could have restrictive disease. Restrictive disease is more uncommon. Restrictive disease is when you have disease not to the, there's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is where you have disease to the airways of your lungs. So you have the trachea that goes from your throat to your lungs, or throat to your bronchi. The bronchi branch off. They're called bronchi because that's Greek for branches. And they branch off into the two lungs, and then they branch out into bronchioles and ultimately to alveoli, where the gas exchange occurs. And if you have disease in those spaces, that's called chronic obstructive disease. And asthma is a type of obstructive illness. It's an inflammatory and obstructive illness. Restrictive disease is where you have issues in the lung tissue, not in the airways. So there's something that damaged the lung tissue, and that can be inflammatory. It can, and most frequently when people get restrictive disease, it's because of environmental cause. So asbestosis or other kinds of pulmonary fibrosis are restrictive disease. And depending on what's going on, you can get different kinds of anti-inflammatory treatments for that. And people sometimes need oxygen for either condition. So you have to get that sorted out. And if you've had that checked out, and so you have a pulmonary test, and they do lung function studies where they have you breathe into a device and see how much before and after taking a bronchodilator, how much your lungs can inflate. And you pass that, and that's normal, and you still have shortness of breath, then you have to figure out if there's anything else going on. You can get shortness of breath from having gastroesophageal reflux. So then you have to go to the GI doctor and see if maybe you have reflux disorder. So that's something you can get checked out. And if that checks out, another reason you can get shortness of breath is because you have something musculoskeletal going on. And if your ribs are out of alignment, if your thoracic spine is out of alignment, you may not be breathing deeply. And then you can get that fixed with body work and stretching and yoga and stress reduction. Then there's another reason you can have shortness of breath. I had a patient not too long ago come into my office saying, I can't always get that good deep breath. So I started talking to him about sorting out if his cardiologist said he had a clean bill of health, the next stop is possibly the pulmonologist. And if the pulmonologist says he's okay, and he doesn't have anything musculoskeletal so much going on, then the thing is to practice breathing. Stress all by itself can make it so that you have shortness of breath and you're not taking a deep breath. And anything that you're having issues with gets better with practice. So if you practice deep breathing, you can get deeper breaths. And when people breathe deeper, they get more oxygen into their bodies and more into their lungs. And you just feel better all over. So when you can focus on breathing deeply and slowly, a lot of wonderful things happen. So it's a good idea to get that all sorted out. So now what I wanted to talk about next is when you get your cholesterol tested, what you classically get tested is you get your total cholesterol tested. You get your LDL cholesterol, which is low-density lipoprotein. That's the protein that carries cholesterol from your liver to the rest of your body for use. You get your HDL cholesterol tested, which is high-density lipoprotein. It's a protein that carries cholesterol from the periphery, from outside your body, back to your liver for processing. So it takes cholesterol out of circulation, which supposedly makes it so that you're at less risk of cardiovascular disease because you have less cholesterol in circulation that can potentially get damaged and stick to arteries and stuff. All right, so that's HDL cholesterol. And then you get triglycerides tested. Triglycerides are the form that fat takes when it's flowing through your blood vessels in your body. Triglycerides will rise when you eat a lot of starch and sugar. Triglycerides and LDL can both be damaged. They can both be subject to oxidative stress. So the thinking is that if LDL and triglycerides are high, as they can be subjected to oxidative stress, they can damage the inside of your blood vessels. The damage to the inside of your blood vessels causes oxidation there. Your body perceives that as an injury. And then your body will start sending platelets to block up the injury from underneath the surface of the inside of that blood vessel. Sends platelets there to clot the area. We'll send calcium there to shore it up, and then also send cholesterol there. And so cholesterol, as we said before, it is a component of cell membranes. So if your body wants to make extra cells and rebuild, it's going to send cholesterol to an area to rebuild it. So is it such a good idea to lower cholesterol if what it's doing is it's trying to repair something? That's a good question, because lowering cholesterol has consequences, and we know that. So there's other things that we test. One of the things I test for is lipoprotein fractionation. So lipoprotein fractionation is an interesting test that you can ask your doctor to do for you. The understanding is that if your lipoprotein fractionation fractionates out different sizes of LDL. So when you're measuring, when you go to the doctor and you just get an LDL test, what they do is they're measuring the volume that LDL takes up in your blood. It's usually measured, there's a couple of ways it's measured. In the United States, it's measured in milligrams per deciliter. There's another unit that they use. When I was in Canada, they measured it differently. It's not milligrams per deciliter. So the numbers were different. So what they're measuring with when you just get a common everyday LDL test is the volume that LDL is taking up in your blood. There's two other ways you can measure it. You can measure you can measure how many LDL particles there are. So LDL has particles, and you can measure the number of particles. So you can measure how many particles there actually are, and then you can measure the actual size of the individual particles. So those are three different measures. So the issue is you can have high LDL cholesterol, but if those LDL particles are large, they tend to be buoyant, and they tend to float through your arteries and not stick to anything. So you want to have predominantly large buoyant LDL. If you predominantly have a large buoyant LDL, you're unlikely to get cardiovascular damage. If you have small, dense LDL, the small, dense LDL is more likely to sit in between the cells of your arteries and stick there. And so that's something you can get tested out. And there are a lot of docs now who they'll test your lipoprotein fractionation. If you have no symptoms of the thing is, if you have symptoms of cardiovascular disease, all bets are off. You have to get a stress test. You have to get an angiogram. You have to get put through the paces to find out if you have blockages in your coronary or coronary arteries. If you were concerned about you getting strokes, then you're going to have to get tests for your cerebrovascular arteries. And one of the ways you get tested for that, the first thing they do is they test your carotid arteries. I had a carotid Doppler last year, and I was clean, clean, clean. I was so happy. Not any atherosclerosis at all. So I'm hoping that continues to hold. All right, so that's one thing you do, the lipoprotein fractionation. That is something you can ask your doctor to test for you. All right, then the other thing I like to test, so if I'm not going to do too much extra cholesterol testing, the two I like to do are lipoprotein fractionation. Do be careful because insurance doesn't necessarily like to cover it, but it's not a super expensive test. So I think it's worth paying for. But talk to your doctor about it. You can ask your doctor if your doctor will order it for you. The other extra test I like to do is oxidized LDL. So LDL is generally not going to hurt your blood vessels unless it's oxidized. If it's oxidized, that means it's been damaged. And how does it get damaged? It gets damaged by oxidative stress, by general metabolism in your body, by if you have high blood pressure, it's running around inside your blood vessels, banging against the walls of your arteries, losing electrons and becoming oxidized. So there is a measure for oxidized LDL. And if you have more oxidized LDL, there's things you can do about that. So in both case, in for lipoprotein fractionation, if you want to increase the size of your LDL, which is a good goal to have, things like eating essential fatty acids, your fish oil, your avocado, your nuts and seeds, your cacao, cocoa that doesn't have a lot of sugar in it, can all raise the size of your LDL, as can cardio exercise. Getting regular cardio exercise can raise the size of your LDL. As to oxLDL, you want to get adequate cardiovascular exercise as well, but you also want to make sure you're consuming lots of antioxidants in the form of fruits and vegetables, and then there are certain supplements that you can take. Supplements such as astaxanthin, which is a great antioxidant that's extracted from marine animals. And I think it can be, and it can also be extracted from algae, I believe. It's a very deep red pigment. It's what turns flamingos pink and shrimp pink. Did you know that flamingos aren't really pink? That if they don't eat their diet of sea life and little shrimps and things, they don't turn pink. So that pink color is astaxanthin. Salmon, likewise. Salmon are that color from astaxanthin. So if you consume salmon, you consume astaxanthin. If you consume shrimp, you consume astaxanthin. People generally don't eat flamingos, so I'm not going to go there. Resveratrol is another favorite of mine. It's a great antioxidant. Resveratrol is found in dark purple fruits and vegetables. It happens to be in peanuts. It's also in the skins of grapes. So you will get some if you drink wine. It's not a great idea to drink too much wine because alcohol has issues with your liver and with cancer risk and stuff like that. But if you eat grapes, if you have a little bit of grape juice, if you eat anything with anthocyanins in it, so that's going to be any of your berries and cherries, you're going to get more antioxidant activity. Oxidized LDL and lipoprotein fractionation, to me, those are the two most important extra tests to be done. There are other tests that you can do. There's also ADMA, asymmetrical dimethylarginine. So that's an indicator of nitric oxide function. You want to have adequate nitric oxide because nitric oxide will expand the size of your arteries, make them more relaxed, will tend to lower your blood pressure, and make it so you have less turbulent blood flow. Less turbulent blood flow, lower blood pressure, less atherosclerosis. So that's a good goal to have. And our favorite thing to tell you to do to increase your ADMA is to drink beet juice, more so than eating beets. Eating beets is fine. Go ahead and eat beets. It's a great thing. But beet juice has more concentrated betalins, and the betalins that are in beets are nitric oxide enhancers. And L-citrulline. L-arginine is an amino acid that does expand your, that has nitric oxide function as well. And there are kinds of L-arginine that you can take that can be helpful, but I tend to recommend L-citrulline over L-arginine because L-citrulline is converted more readily. Your levels of L-arginine will be higher in your blood from L-citrulline than it will be from L-arginine. And citrulline is called citrulline because it's in citrullus, which is watermelon. So it's an inexpensive powder to buy that you can throw into juice easily. And a great way to do it is to get watermelon water and throw some L-citrulline in it. Then you have this high L-citrulline watermelon water, but you can put your L-citrulline in anything, really. It doesn't taste bad. And you do a few grams of that, and it's a nitric oxide enhancer. It's something you can do before a workout, because when you enhance your nitric oxide before a workout, you might have a more enjoyable workout. And you'll feel more ready to go. So people do beet juice shots or watermelon water shots or, you know, L-citrulline before a workout, and it helps them. L-citrulline is also something that's used. Nitric oxide enhancers are helpful for erectile function because erectile function is a cardiovascular function. If you have erectile dysfunction, it is possible that you have an issue with cardiovascular health. So L-citrulline can be helpful for that, as can, you know, watermelon. So watermelon and beets are my two favorite things to tell people about to enhance their nitric oxide. They tend to be give you the most bang for your buck, if you will. Although raw organic cocoa nibs, cocoa powder, try to have as low sugar as possible. Cocoa is a nitric oxide enhancer as well. And so are leafy greens and so are nuts and seeds. They have nitric oxide enhancing properties. So if you eat an over a healthy diet, you're going to get some enhanced nitric oxide. So if you test your ADMA and your ADMA is high, that could mean you have a nitric oxide situation. And then it's a good idea to up your beets and your beet juice and your watermelon and make sure you're eating more produce and not so much starch and sugar. Then there's TMAO, which is trimethyl amino oxide. And that is supposedly, when you measure that and that's high, that's supposed to be a higher indicator of whether you might get a major cardiac event. So it's worth lowering that. And you'll have a higher TMAO if you consume, like, you can lower your TMAO by eating. This is like, we tell you red meat. Red meat was always like, what's going to give you cardiovascular disease because of the fat, right? Well, red meat is only going to give you cardiovascular disease if you get inflamed by it, if for some reason you don't work, it doesn't work for you. But more likely, it's because of the poor quality fat. So if an animal is fed on corn, it's going to have more linoleic acid in it, and the linoleic acid from the corn is going to be marbled through the meat and make the meat softer and nicer to eat, but it's more inflammatory. You don't want a lot of linoleic acid, that's omega-6 fatty acid, in your blood because that's more inflammatory. So red meat, if it's grass-fed, has the same fatty acid profile as fatty fish. So grass-fed and finished beef is not an issue for omega-3 fatty acids. It could be an issue for TMAO, though. So if you find you have an elevated TMAO and you eat a fair bit of red meat, you might want to cut back on the red meat. Dairy also will raise your TMAO. And dairy is one of those funny things. Dairy is good for you unless it's not good for you. And it's weird that we consume the dairy of other species after the age of weaning. It's not a good thing necessarily. I tell people that if you can eat dairy and you feel fine when you're eating it and you don't have cardiovascular disease and you don't have excessively high cholesterol, that go ahead and eat dairy. But dairy overall is not the best thing for us to be eating because dairy comes from, it's intended to help little babies grow from a little baby up to, past weaning, whenever that is. And when we consume the dairy of a cow, cows are supposed to grow up to be a ton or two. And we're really not supposed to be a ton or two. We're supposed to be much, much less than a ton. So you can imagine that if you're consuming dairy, it might be problematic. And it can raise your TMAO. So it's not necessarily because of the saturated fat. It's because it raises your TMAO. And so if you have high TMAO and you consume a lot of dairy, consume a lot of red meat, either or, you might want to cut back on those, see if your TMAO goes down. If you don't consume a lot of dairy and you don't consume a lot of red meat and you do eat a lot of seafood, seafood contains TMAO. We know that populations that consume a lot of seafood have less cardiovascular disease. So if you have elevated TMAO just from consuming a lot of seafood, we're not going to worry about it. We're going to say, all right, you have a little excess TMAO. You're not doing red meat. You're not particularly doing dairy. You do eat a lot of seafood. It's fine. And if your other parameters are fine, then we don't worry about the TMAO. Then there's inflammatory markers like lipoprotein PLA2 and cardiac C-reactive protein. Cardiac C-reactive protein isn't as specific as lipoprotein PLA2. Lipoprotein PLA2 is a lipoprotein that will carry phospholipase A2. So when you have more lipoprotein PLA2, there's an indicator that there's more cardiovascular inflammation going on. And so you want to do things to lower your cardiovascular inflammation, like all of your antioxidants, good quality vitamin E with tocotrienols in it, fish oil, astaxanthin, resveratrol, things like that. Cardiac C-reactive protein can also be an indicator that you have increased inflammation in your blood vessels. It's not as specific as lipoprotein PLA2. And if you have very high cardiac C-reactive protein, it can be an indicator that you have elevated plain C-reactive protein and that you have inflammation elsewhere in the body. Whereas lipoprotein PLA2, if that's elevated, you probably have some cardiovascular inflammation. It's worth working on. Then there's lipoprotein little A. Lipoprotein little A is very frustrating because there's all kinds of things that are supposed to help to lower it. Lipoprotein little A is a lipoprotein that sticks to LDL cholesterol and supposedly makes it so that it is more likely to stick to the inside of your blood vessels, which is unfortunate. And so I've tried a lot of things that are supposed to lower lipoprotein PLA2. I give niacin supposed to lower lipoprotein PLA2. I haven't had a lot of success helping my patients lower lipoprotein PLA2. So what I tend to do is work on helping them lower their LDL cholesterol and getting their LDL size raised, because lipoprotein PLA2, lipoprotein little A, is very hard to lower. So, I mean, I've tried using niacin. So we do extended release niacin. That's supposed to be helpful. We do herbs and supplements that have chelating effects. So a lot of different minerals like zinc and copper and selenium. And I've tried to use that. And it's difficult. And I'm not sure if lipoprotein little A, because these drugs like statins and ezetimibe and your PCSK9 inhibitors can lower cholesterol if they lower lipoprotein little A too, and put you at less risk as well. So those are all things that you can measure. You can talk to your doc about measuring those things. And it'll give you, so if you just come in and you've got a cholesterol that's a little bit over 200, you have an LDL that's a little bit over 100 or maybe as high as 150, and you're like, I really don't want to take statins, and you have no cardiovascular symptoms, there's no cerebrovascular symptoms, I'm pointing to my head. If you don't have any cardiovascular, cerebrovascular symptoms and you have elevated cholesterol, you can ask your doctor to test for these things, and maybe they would hold off on offering you the statins. So one of the ways that we're going to, help you to lower your cholesterol is to talk about, different natural things that you can lower cholesterol. So we'll get started with that. I just have a few more minutes and we'll get started with a few of those ideas. All right. So, here's some remedies for high cholesterol that you can use. So, there's an herb, I don't tend to think of this herb as lowering cholesterol, but there you have it, the herb astragalus, which is an herb that I think of as supporting the immune system, and it's used in traditional Chinese medicine. It's thought of as an adaptogen, which means it helps a lot of systems in your body work better. So astragalus is something that I give to people with autoimmune conditions. People take it to protect their immune systems ongoing. Like during the pandemic, it would have been a nice thing to take regularly to help to protect you from various illnesses. And there's some studies that show that astragalus can be helpful for heart health. And that there's research that may show that it can help with lowering cholesterol. And it doesn't mention a mechanism of action here. But it has been shown, that in general, it helps to lower cholesterol. It is possible, because it's an adaptogen, it's going to lower your stress. One of the things that will raise your cholesterol is, guess what? Good old cortisol. How does cortisol raise your cholesterol? Well, cortisol, remember, your adrenals are going to kick that out when your body perceives you as, needing more energy to do whatever stressful thing you're doing, or do whatever thing you're doing. Cortisol is released from your adrenals. Its job is to run around your body, break down tissue, turn it into sugar, so you have energy in your body to run away from the bear, or, you know, get your podcast done, or, you know, get through your workday, or whatever it is you're doing. If you have too much sugar in your blood and you're just sitting and you're not using up the sugar, sugar's going to get turned into fat. When you have more fat in your blood, you're going to have raised triglycerides, and ultimately that can lead to having higher cholesterol. So stress all by itself can raise your cholesterol. Lowering stress can help to lower your cholesterol. And one of the things we see, you're going to have, there's so many mechanisms by which stress affects your cardiovascular health. There's oxidative damage, there's raising your blood sugar, there's raising your cholesterol. So lowering stress can be helpful. And one of the things that astragalus can do, because it's an adaptogen, is to help to lower your stress. Okay, Next herb, a favorite of mine, I pretty much take it every single day. It's hawthorn. And hawthorn is special to me because I grew up on Hawthorn Lane in East Windsor, New Jersey. And Hawthorn Lane was spelled with an E, so I don't know if that hawthorn was named after the tree or the plant. The thing is that I lived in Hickory Acres. Hickory Acres was a housing development in East Windsor, New Jersey. It's still there. And it was called Hickory Acres, so most of the streets had tree names, or they had, you know, rustic, country-sounding names. So the block that I lived on Hawthorn Lane. If you left my house and turned left, you'd be on Holly Drive. If you turned left again, you'd be on Woodland Drive. And if you turned left again, you'd be on Iris Drive. And if you went to the end of Hawthorn Lane in one direction, you'd be on Brooklawn Drive. Brooklawn Drive, if you went a little ways, you turn right onto Fern Drive. And there was also Cypress Drive and Knollwood Drive. And then you would turn, if you turned off of Fern Drive, between Brooklawn and Fern was Hankins Road. Hi, John and Beth. Nothing to do with John and Beth. But Hankins Road was there because it was somebody's name and it was there. It predated Hickory Acres. And if you continued on Hankins Road, one side of it was East Windsor. The other side of it was Washington Township, which then became Robbinsville Township. And if you continued on Hankins Road, you'd wind up on Village Road. So anyway, I just got off on a tangent there and didn't tell you about hawthorn. So hawthorn really should have been spelled without the E, because hawthorn without the E is how you spell the name of the tree. And there was, in fact, a hawthorn tree growing in our lawn. And so hawthorn makes these beautiful red berries with, guess what, anthocyanins. So the anthocyanins are going to strengthen your blood vessels. Hawthorn is a lovely herb that helps to increase, it's a positive inotrope. And what that means is it strengthens your heart so that each beat of your heart pumps out more blood per beat. So your heart can beat slower and you preserve the integrity of your heart. So I take a bunch of hawthorn every day, including doing exercise. So hawthorn supposedly can help to lower your cholesterol as well. So you have to be careful about taking it with other medications. I'm not taking any prescription meds, but I enjoy my hawthorn, and I'm hoping that it's protecting my blood vessels. It makes a delightful, you can use it in tea. The solid extract, I have a solid extract now that has some other berry extract mixed in with it, so it makes it taste good. On its own, it's kind of bitter. So when you get solid extracts, which is a great way to get a higher dose of it, it's usually mixed in with honey or other berries or some kind of, or maybe glycerin. All right, so that's all I have time for today. I'm going to talk to you about more natural ways to lower cholesterol at our next Radio Naturopath, which will be in a couple weeks. This is going to be coming out the same time it usually does. I'm just recording it earlier because, as I said, on Monday the 17th, I'm seeing patients, and on Friday the 21st and Saturday the 22nd, I'm going to the CNPA conference. So we're doing things a little bit sooner. So if you're listening on Facebook Live, thank you for listening today. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me, well, Ron Meniza wasn't here today. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.